You're going to love our next guest. And he says the problems of weak leadership add to our stress, anxiety, frustration, anger, worry, and depression. And it literally is killing us. He's going to teach you the skills that can save your life next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Patrick here, host and creator of this ever-growing show we call CJ Evolution. That's Criminal Justice Evolution. And we are always evolving, hence the name. We are always getting better. And I thank you for tuning into the show. I know you got many options, but thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Big shout out to all those brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. You are doing an amazing job. Keep up the fantastic work. I recently got an email from a guy back east who wanted to know who I use for my podcast, who I use to host, and it's Podbeam, folks. You can see the link on the cjevolution.com website, and they are amazing. I've been using them since I started my show. They can help you get your podcast show off the ground. So excited to have Andrew Whitman on the show. You're going to love this guy. He's been teaching leadership and mental toughness for over 25 years. A former Marine. I guess once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine. He's a combat veteran and a former police officer and federal agent. He's a leadership expert and author of Ground Zero Leadership, the CEO of You. You're going to love Andrew. Andrew Whitman is on the CJ Evolution podcast. Andrew, are you there?
I am here, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And welcome to the show. I mean, you got such an amazing background, Andrew, and we'll get into that. You were in the military. Thank you for serving in the Marine Corps. You were in law enforcement. You're doing great things still with law enforcement. What made you want to serve?
You know, I got to be honest with you. It was like for selfish reasons at the beginning. You know what I mean? So I was a fat kid in high school and I got bullied. And my mom and dad were missionaries, so I wasn't allowed to fight back, you know. And I was a big crybaby and I turned to food for comfort, right? So I was just getting fatter. And I was 5'3 and 185 pounds. My nickname was Beach Ball.
Oh,
I know, right? Yeah.
We can laugh now about it. We can't laugh.
We did. Yeah. But yeah, I had two, when I moved, we were in a town called Wagga Wagga, New South Wales in Australia, halfway between Sydney and Melbourne. It was this little town, getting bullied. And I was one of, you know, my brother and I were the only two American kids in the entire town. And these two guys, they came and kind of saved me, and they were both going to go into the Australian Army and their SAS and the SBS and their special forces. And they got me kind of hooked on military culture, much to the chagrin of my missionary parents. But I got a taste for it. I thought, you know what? I don't want to live my life, you know, in anxiety and fear and being bullied. And I had the Marine Corps had what I needed. So I enlisted. I came home and instead of going to college first, I went and enlisted the Marine Corps. Spent 6 years in the Corps.
Well, thank you for your service and getting back to your... So your parents were ultimately accepting of that you wanted to kind of...
Oh, yeah. You know. No, it was good. It was rough at the beginning, you know, how sometimes, you know, like... But they were super proud of me at the end. And then, you know, then I got out and I went to college. And then the regimented life, the discipline, the brotherhood, you know, the uniform, it got into my system. And I went into law enforcement. I remember the day that I was, you know, I was hired at the sheriff's office here in South Carolina, and I took my oath. I turned to my wife and I said, I got my life back today, you know, because I felt like, because now I'm back part of the brotherhood, you know. And I know, but it's people that, you know, if you, the closest thing maybe would be if you were on an athletic team, you know, and understand the brotherhood. But yeah. And so that's why, I mean, I can't lie about it. It's really been for selfish reasons that I've been, you know, I said this one time, I was with my Desert Storm company commander. We're still get together every year and it's been like 30 years. And we were up at the Marine Corps Museum a couple of years ago and someone said, thank you for your service. I said, hey, listen, I got way more out of it than I put in. And he goes, I know, I was there. I was like, dang, come on, sir. You know, what the heck, giver?
You
know?
You got a doctorate in philosophy and theology. What made you get into theology? I mean, obviously you're...
go ahead. Yeah. No, well, you know, I'm the missionaries kid, right? But out of five, I was the fifth kid out of six, and I was the one supposed to go in the ministry. So I was really supposed to go to Bible college. So that really flipped them out when I said, I'm going to the Marine Corps, and I didn't go to Bible college. Now, so I did finish, right? And then I did, you know, my bachelor's, and then I worked on my master's. And when I left, I was a federal agent for 6 years. And when I left that, I came home and I ran for Congress in South Carolina. And I failed at that ultimately. But then, but then I pastored a church, which is really probably what, you know, God tricked me into coming home to pastor a church. So I pastored a church for 5 years and I finished my doctorate. I actually wrote my dissertation in a Bearcat, you know, in Kabul, Afghanistan on midnight shift, you know, with a red light, I'd be writing and then I'd go in the break room and I'd type it out.
That is amazing. And talk about dedication. You know, I mean, in the environment you're in, I mean, to have that concentration to work on a dissertation to get your PhD.
Well, and again, it's like, it's selfish. I had to keep myself occupied because, you know, we're in a team. There's, you know, five of us in a Bearcat and you're taking turns up in the turret and, you know, and it's cold or whatever. What are you going to, you can either sleep or lose your mind and do nothing. And of course, or just do nonsense, you know, play on your phone, Tetris or something. But I was like, I'm at least going to, you know, redeem this time that I'm here, you know, I have nothing, while you have downtime, you know, so I finished my doctorate and you know, and I really, and again, I did it so that my dad would kind of be, you know, proud of me or whatever, you know, like I told you kind of before the show, I love it when he calls me Dr. Whitman. That's the only one that I really love that really matters to me, you know.
And you did a lot of contract work, security contractor for the State Department, right, Andrew? You were in Jordan, Kosovo, Afghanistan.
Four tours of Afghanistan, Jordan, Kosovo. So I did like 6 deployments with them and over the course of 5 years. And I did a lot of stateside training too with the WIPS 3 program, you know, and this is the beauty of it. Cause I was a guy who was in the military. I'm a combat vet, infantry in the Marine Corps, but also law enforcement. So I knew how to make the switch from just rules of engagement to use of force, which is a really different mindset. So a lot of what the training that I did was train guys that are used to rules of engagement, clear cut to use of force and that critical thinking element of how do I, you know, articulate. You know, and it's a jump. It really is a jump.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, it takes, I mean, and I never thought about that, but you just made me think about it, you know, in the military and then you're in the civilian world and it's two different things. You got to change your mindset.
Yeah. And that was our biggest push really when I was at the State Department training, you know, SEALs, Marines, Rangers, and SF for high threat diplomatic security is that we wanted, you know, the State Department wanted their hard skills, right? That we wanted the CQB and, you know, the SWAT team kind of, you know, the defensive tactics and all that. But then I had to move them from the military mindset to more of a law enforcement mindset where you do have that use of force and it's not just rules of engagement clear cut and there's nothing clear cut. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's really what happens on the streets here in the US. There's nothing that's like there's nothing black and white. It's always about the reasonableness of the action that you took and can you articulate. And so you have to think about the actions that you take and be responsible for your actions, not just say, well, here was the rules of engagement. And it's like flying without a safety net. Right. So
sure.
That's what I mean. We never get a break in law enforcement from that, right? We can't hide behind rules of engagement. You always have to articulate why the actions that we took. And there's always somebody Monday morning quarterbacking us, right? There's always somebody that are going to pick apart, you know, what we did,
well,
including ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially
today. But
it's
good though, mm-hmm. right? But it's good. And so that, cause we learn from our mistakes. So and that's what I love about, you know, law enforcement is that we are willing to look at and learn from our mistakes. And look at it. Being a cop is totally different now. I started in like 97. You're retired too now, right? So it's totally different. Back when I started, like the cell phones were bricks, you know, and a bag phone. No one had a.
They were.
You know, and the minute you had to pay, like, remember there was daytime and nighttime minutes?
Oh, yeah. Well, remember we went through these phases of cell phones where they were really, really tiny. I think it was Motorola had a really small ass flip phone thing. And then they went through these flip phones. And then I remember when touch screens came out, I said, I'm not using that shit. I need to feel the buttons. And then my wife was like, you're going to use it. Cause that's the future. And she was right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, I loved my BlackBerry. I did. I could type really fast with my thumbs, you know, and these touch screens still give me, right. We're just a bunch of old curmudgeon old guys.
Remember back in the day when we
I had to walk uphill both ways to school, you know.
Andrew, what do you think? I mean, you spent time in law enforcement, and you obviously have your finger on the pulse right now. I think you hit on one thing that's going on in law enforcement. We're under the microscope now more than ever, and I agree with you. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We got to be accountable. What other problems or challenges do you think are out there today for law enforcement?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, this is what I'm working on, you know, right now, this is my, like the thing that I'm like almost obsessed with is dealing with the cumulative stress of the job. And again, like, so we know for the stats say that up to 54% of law enforcement have either full-on PTSD or symptoms of PTSD, and the rest of us have symptoms of stress, which is why, look, we all know, and I hope you don't, you know, we that I don't even want to give the stats because it's like, you know, like knock on wood, cross your fingers, all that stuff, but we know that a ton of us, within 3 years of retirement, bad things happen to our bodies. I'll say mm-hmm. it that way.
Yeah.
But that's just the stats. And I always joke on the podium. I said, what is it? The free, you know, Waffle Hut food we've been eating. They're like, that didn't help us. Right. But no, it's the body, you know, you can't get away from having 20 or 30 years of this kind of constant stress without learning how to manage it, without it taking toll on your body. They're just not. So what there is, my whole thing is mental toughness, resilience or whatever. And there's an actual process. And if I look at mental toughness, and the science backs this up, that if we look at mental toughness and resilience, it's like a physical skill. It's like a muscle that you could work out at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't do push-ups like one time every 6 months, you know, your muscles are going to atrophy, right? So what we want to do is take like a mental toughness or a resilience tool and how to manage this stress every day and just work on it like we were doing like 50 push-ups before we went to bed, right? And if you do that every day, you're going to be really rock solid strong. I mean, it's not CrossFit strong or whatever, right? But you're going to be strong and your muscles aren't going to atrophy. So if you at least did that, and a lot of us don't even do that. We're just kind of going through the day and we keep taking these hits on our body and our emotions. And yeah, it just adds up over time. And I think that's the biggest thing in law enforcement right now.
Mm-hmm. And emotional, I mean, because you've heard of Dr. Kevin Gilmartin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, emotional survival in law enforcement. I agree with you. I mean,
right.
We just have to be taking care of ourselves better. I mean, this is the stuff that they never talked about when I entered the profession years ago. But I like the dialogue now because people like you are out there training this. And I think it really comes down to mindset, Andrew. I mean, you have to get yourself in that mindset where, you know, in order for you to take care of other people, you got to take care of yourself first, right?
That's exactly right? That's why I call my and that's why my book is called Ground Zero Leadership CEO.
I love
you,
it.
Right? So if you don't do you first, then you know you have to take care of you first. It's like we all know this, right? You're on the airplane, they do the safety brief.
Yeah.
The oxygen mask falls. Like whose mask do you put on first? Well, ours, because if I go toes up, I can't help anybody else, right? So yeah, so it's I mean it's stuff we know, but knowing and doing is almost two different. Not almost, it is two different things. And it's almost, here's where I want to say almost, it's almost like we think there's a social pressure that we're selfish if we take care of ourselves first, and it's the exact opposite.
No, I don't know why is that the thought out there? And I know not everybody thinks that way, but yeah, it's almost like some social stigma. If you you know, if you take care of yourself first, well, you're somehow being selfish. You're not looking after the next guy. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know if it's guilt assuagement or, you know, and really I think it's because we don't have an internal identity. Like we haven't accepted ourselves. And so here's like the number one fear of all human beings is rejection, right? Mm-hmm. It's all human beings and social animals. So the number one need is acceptance. But if you haven't accepted yourself, you can't accept anybody else. And you're also leaving yourself open to somebody else's acceptance. So you're going to search for their acceptance. So if you have this is why people judge each other. I judge you because really what I'm doing is I have an issue with my own life and I have a problem with it, but it's easier for me to project it onto you. That way I don't have to deal with the cognitive dissonance, right? So a lot of what we talk about is just honest assessment, getting real with ourselves. And, you know, we don't have to do it publicly. My Lord, no. I mean, but do it, but at least privately and in your own head, you know, do an honest assessment of where you're at. And like, you know, self-awareness is huge.
Mm-hmm. And how do you train that in people? I love what you're doing with Ground Zero Leadership, because it has to start with yourself. But how do you, are there things you can do, rituals
Absolutely.
People can do?
Well, the first thing is to understand how the brain works. So what mm-hmm. we found out in cognitive neuroscience in the last decade is that we take in every second 11 million bits of information per second through what we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we touch, what we smell. 11 million bits of information per second, but only 126 bits goes to our conscious mind for action, right? So we upload at broadband speed, but we download and take action on dial-up speed. So the question is, how do we pick that 126? Well, what they found out through brain mapping and brain imaging is that what we think, what our attitude is, and what our opinion is filters the information. So every human is a genius, whether they consciously know it or not. Their brain says, hey, I'm a genius. And if you say today's going to suck, then your brain will go to work, filter the 11 million bits of information, find the exact 126 bits out of that, find the needle in the haystack,
yeah,
and prove that your genius self correct today sucks. And then it'll discard anything that would go against it.
Yeah.
So that's confirmation bias, right? So if I understand, now here's the thing. Am I helping myself or am I hurting myself in the direction that I point my 126? And I'll tell you, I got very cynical within the first year and a half to 18 months on the street shagging 911 calls. And I just automatically assumed, because my 126, my confirmation bias was everybody's a dirtbag, right? And yep, not everybody is.
No.
But after so many calls, I start believing that.
Yeah. I've talked about this so much on the show before. And this, I couldn't agree with you more, Andrew. I mean, I had this thought in my mind just a handful of years ago that, you know, those people are them. They're not me. You know, I mean, I don't trust anybody out there that doesn't have a badge. And the more I learned, the more I started changing my mindset, you're exactly right. The majority of people out there are good people. We just deal with the certain percentage that are dirtbags. And then, but that affects everything we do.
Yeah.
You know,
when we have a bias about and I'll tell you this. Usually when we show up on the scene, it's not even that those people are dirtbags. There's some people, they're just, catch them at their worst moment, right?
People don't call the police when things are great. Right. They call it when things are hitting the fan.
Right. And so that's the stress, right? That's the stress of what we do. We have to deal with it all the time. And so then it taints everything that we, and listen, there's a heavy lift to turn that around, but that's where it starts, where I got to understand, hey, I have a bias here. And then on top of that, when we start to understand that there's this thing called the hormone dump, right? So when your brain looks at a set of events and you have a perception or opinion, your brain fires off this chemical called a neurotransmitter. Well, the neurotransmitter actually mimics hormones. So the neurotransmitter calls up the hormones out of your endocrine system to sustain your response, right? Mm-hmm. This fight, flight, or freeze. So and this is what I call the hormone dump. When the hormone dumps, it stays in your system for 20 minutes and you cannot be reasonable. You cannot be rational. It's almost like an epileptic seizure. I call it an emotional seizure.
Yeah.
Now listen, if you've ever been in a near car wreck, right? Brakes have slammed, horns are honked, but nothing happened. Logically, we're all safe. It's then after that, like a couple seconds later, then your heart starts pounding and then you get that sick feeling. That's the hormone dump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So every call that we go on, do you remember like the first time you got pulled over, like before you were a cop, like you had the hormone dump. Now we don't anymore because we're on the other end of the thing. But every time you pull somebody over and I get out of the squad car, they're hormone dumping. So I got to understand they're not going to be reasonable or rational. You know, they're freaking out.
Hormone dumping. I love that.
I wish they taught me this in the academy because you can't de-escalate somebody who's like having an epileptic seizure.
Yeah.
In the same way, you're not going to be able to de-escalate somebody who's having an emotional seizure.
Yeah.
So slow the clock down. You're not going to clear the call for 20 minutes. Just relax. Just get them talking. Let the hormones get out of their system.
It's great advice because we tell that to young officers and veterans too, is that just slow down. Most of the time you got time on your side, dude, just slow down. All right.
Yeah.
Slow down.
I mean, look, so you got three calls holding. They'll hold.
Yeah,
you
know, they ain't going anywhere.
Like, yeah, I would go 10-8 and I'd have three calls holding. Then I'm cussing first shift because what were they doing? You know what I mean? Like, come on at 3 to 11. Bravo 35, we got three calls holding. What the frack was Alpha 35 doing?
He's eating.
You know? Right. Shucking the reports. I mean, you know, so just relax. You're going to be there the whole shift. Just slow everything down.
Yeah.
Hey, take your time. You got this one. And I wish they would train this in the academy. So I train this every time I get on the podium in front of law enforcement, right? Because this is huge in the use of force, right? Because that's why when we're doing like hostage stuff, everything, we're just going to slow it down. We're going to wear you out to your hormones. So you're exhausted. Like when you had a screaming match with your significant other over something silly, but it goes on for like 2 hours, you're physically exhausted with it because you've just been hormone dumping. After about four hormone dumps, you're physically just smoked.
Love it. Now, I love what you say. I mean, you say, I love everything you're doing, but about emotional decisions, Andrew, I mean, I love it because they don't work out. And I think that a lot of people out there, and I realize it now, I wish I knew it when I was younger, they make decisions off emotions and it never works out, right?
Well, if you happen to get lucky and it did work out that one time, there's no way you could duplicate
exactly
it. So you won the lottery, you know, so good job, right? But right. So I always talk about separating logic from emotion, right? Emotion is our driver. It's why we would do the hard thing, but we want to steer with logic, right? So think about like if you were an intercontinental ballistic missile, emotion is the rocket engine and the fuel that gets us off the launch pad. But our guidance system is logic, right? So I want to use logic and reason to direct the missile. Mm-hmm. So I got to have both, because a lot of people, and we see this in bureaucracy, right? In law enforcement, the ones that get, they're like the super smart ones that write really well, but they're analysis by our paralysis by analysis. They can never get off the starting block. They just want to use logic, but there's no engine, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a little kid trying to steer a car that's parked, you know, they're moving the steering wheel, but nothing's happening.
Yeah.
So I need both things, but I always want to separate them and keep them in their lane. Right. So emotion is my engine, but I always want to steer with logic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so important. And logic is important, and emotion is important, but how do you find that?
Right.
How do you find that balance, buddy?
Okay. So what I always do is I channel my dispatcher, right? Channel the 911 operator. So what they do when a call comes in, are they, you know, how do they answer the phone? Oh, my, are they, they're like, 911, what's your emergency? They're very calm. They're like, oh my gosh, the house is on fire. Someone's having a heart attack. Right? So we can do it on the job, but we need to do it everyday life when we come in, when the kids leave their toys in the middle of the floor and we step on it at 2 o'clock in the morning and all this kind of stuff. I need to channel the 911 operator, my dispatcher.
Yeah.
The first thing I'm going to ask is, what's the emergency? 99% of the time I'm freaking out. There's no emergency.
Yeah.
Like literally, right? So I'm acting as a emotional reactor throughout my life. And we're all first responders. We like to call ourselves that, right? But the only time we're actually first responding is when the 911 call comes in. The dispatcher takes the information, asking questions, gives us the information, and we come up with a plan of response. We need to do that, right, throughout everything we do in life. Mm-hmm. So give ourselves the cognitive space. So I'm going to add, like, so I ask myself, like, what's the emergency? Or here's a really the great question that I ask myself is, how would I do it? I suspend my disbelief for 2 minutes. Whenever, like, the sergeant or the cat, whatever something is brought down, some new order, and my initial response on my inside, my inner voice says, we can't do that. That won't work. That's mm-hmm. impossible. I'm just going to say, all right, I get it. That's impossible. But just for 2 minutes, I'm just going to ask myself, if it were possible, how would I pull this off? Mm-hmm. You know, how would we do it? And but because the human brain has to answer a question, as we found out in neuroscience, it's the original search engine. Mm-hmm. So if you begin to ask that question, you literally stop the fight, flight, or freeze. You turn on the prefrontal cortex of your brain, the executive function, and you begin to have reason again. Mm-hmm. You're not operating out of fight, flight, or freeze. So yeah. We want to give ourselves some cognitive space, right? So channel the 911 operator, even when you don't feel like it.
Yeah. And the one thing I've learned over time, Andrew, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that most of the shit we worry about never comes to fruition. It never happens. Never
right.
happens. So we're just, we're wasting energy on stuff that I the older I get, again, I wish I would have known this years ago. I only worry about something when it happens. I'm getting to a point right now. I still worry about certain things, but not as much as I used to. Where, how do I, why am I worrying about stuff that hasn't even occurred yet? And most of the time, it's not going to occur.
I'm 100% with you, man. 100%. And I preach this to my kids even, and they get it, man. Like my 15-year-old, my 18-year-old, they get it. They don't, if it's outside, the only thing that we can control is our response. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing. I can't control the weather. I can't control what people think. I can't control what people say. I can't control the economy. I can't control, you know, policy, right? I can only control my response to it. And I am not going to worry about stuff until it already is something that I have to deal with. Until then, like you said, it's just wasted energy, man.
Yeah. And kind of shifting gears again, I love what we were talking a little bit off the air and a little bit on the air about mindset. I am a huge believer, Andrew, and again, beating this horse, I wish I would have known this earlier, in the law of attraction. What you put out there is what you're going to get. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a universal faith-based principle. Rather, it's Eastern religion, and they call it karma, right? Mm-hmm. A Western religion says reap what you sow, you know, or the law of attraction, or you're not religious at all, law of attraction, or what comes around goes around.
Yeah.
Like, these are just laws. It's like gravity, man. It just is. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to convince anybody of it. This is like, listen, if you want to believe the earth's flat, go ahead. I mean, science tells us it's round, right? So if you act like a jerk, then when jerky stuff happens back to you, why are you shocked, man?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Karma Bus always makes all her stops. A lot of times she's late, you know, according to my schedule, I think she's late, but she always makes all her stops.
But how important is mindset in law enforcement? It is so important, right? It's so important in the military,
life
too.
And death, man. It's life and death. And it's especially in law enforcement and in the military, but really even across the board, just as a human being. But mindset for us, it really is life or death. right? And that's why I break it down like the five performance mindsets. Then the top one being resilient minded, or what I call the elite warrior, where I say I'm the problem and I'm the solution, right? There's no victim mentality. I don't blame anybody for anything else. And I know that the only security out there is my ability to handle whatever comes my way. It's nobody else's fault if I don't get the results that I want, mm-hmm. right? And when you have that, I'm in control of my life. I'm the captain of this ship, CEO of myself, right? And I will not abdicate that power to anybody else's hand.
Yeah. And how important, Andrew, is it, you think, to surround yourself with people who are pumping you up? I mean, I know that sounds like maybe a dumb question, but
right,
I think
so many
people, I think, just are, and sometimes it's family members, which makes it that much difficult. Uh-huh. But I think we all can attest to that. We all have somebody, I have people in my life that deal with the same shit all the time because of the people that are around, and they just get sucked into this toxicity all the time. It's 24/7. Yep. It's like, find new friends, man. Go out and get around people that are going to pump you up.
100%, man. We already know, we scientifically know that consciousness and thinking is contagious. So they did a study, and it came out in the New England Journal of Medicine, that if you have a friend, and I'm going to use weight loss, and they used obesity, but it transfers to everything else. But if you have a friend who's obese, you have a 57% chance of being obese yourself. But if you say they're a close friend, regardless of where they are geographically, if they're a close friend, you have 171% a chance of also being obese.
Wow.
Right? And it's because of mindset towards this. That has nothing to do with genetics at this point. It's all mindset and who you're surrounding yourself with. And our moms told us this, man. They told the birds of a feather flock together, right? I mean, we know it, but we don't really pay attention to it. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, what are you feeding on? I always ask people that. What are the shows that you watch? What's the music that you listen to? What are the books, magazines, and newspapers you read? Are you feeding on political talk radio, or are you feeding yourself good stuff like this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a huge difference also in your mindset.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important that's one of the things, and I'm not going to, what I'm about to say, please don't take any offense, these law enforcement people out there, I love you, brothers and sisters in blue, but one of the best things I ever did, Andrew, was kind of not hang out with law enforcement all the time. I kind of changed my mindset and started hanging out with people that had nothing to do with law enforcement, and it really helped me. You know, because they didn't, and I'm not saying everybody out there in law enforcement is cynical or better or anything, but there's a bunch of people in my life that are cops that were cynical and better. And so I wanted to see a different perspective. And that, I think that helped me out a lot with kind of changing my perspective. It goes back to not everybody out there is a criminal.
Right. And it's not just law enforcement, man. It's this group think, right? So it's the same thing as like, if we were all bankers, you don't want to just hang out with bankers. Yeah. You know, if you're all plumbers, right. So we want to have a cross section of people's different perspectives, because it helps me be more balanced and well-rounded and see the world from somebody else's perspective, which actually lowers my stress.
Yeah. Well, and it lowers your stress. And for me, it just changed my perspective, because you're conditioned. You know this, Andrew, from a very young age or young career in law enforcement, at least I was, and most cops out there. Okay. If you're not us, you're one of them. And, you know, if you don't have a badge, you're a criminal. I mean, it's us against them mentality. Not with everybody. I get it. But, I mean, that's how, you know, when I got
into broad strokes, you're right. That's what we still do that. It's the thin blue line. And, you know, I got my, I have my FOP tags on my car, and I'll never leave that. Right. Because we understand it. But at the same time, I think you and I, we've earned the right to also, it's kind of like as a Marine, I'll say it that way so we don't get anybody mad. As a Marine, I'm not letting any squid Navy guy talk bad about the Marine Corps, but another Marine can say something and I'll be like, yeah, you're right. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing, right? We're in law enforcement.
True.
We spend our life in it. We're allowed to say this stuff, you know?
That's a good point.
Some crook is saying it. I'm taking him to the woodshed, man. No kidding.
Now, how can people find your book, Ground Zero Leadership, CEO of You, which I love that title. How can people find it, Andrew?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, man. All my books are on Amazon. If you want like a bunch of free content, I do a radio show. That stuff is up there on getwarriortough.com. It's on like little YouTube videos. We slice the show up into like 12-minute videos. So that's, you know, it's all out there. It's, you know, Get Warrior Tough. You can just Google, you know, Andrew Whitman Marine or Mental Toughness Marine. All my stuff will pop up.
I was in the Army, Andrew. So I'm sorry.
Well, I won't hold it against you, brother.
Andrew.
You know what's funny, though, Patrick? Hey, you know what's funny, though? As soon as you go downrange, I don't care if you're Army, Navy, or Air Force. If you got the American flag, you know, on your shoulder, oh, we're good, baby.
I remember we had these Marine Force recons guys come to brag. I was in the 82nd, and they were coming to jump school, and they were all excited because they were going to start jumping with an airborne unit. And they were like, well, you know, how many times do you guys jump? Young Marine guy was asking me, and I said, dude, we jump like every week.
Yeah. So you're sick of it.
Dude, we're sick of it.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, yeah. Oh no, we've got to jump again. It's like doing PT. You know what I mean? Like nobody's like, yay, we're jumping today. Like, oh man, we got to jump again.
Well, Andrew, how can people find you, brother? If they want to, I mean, website, all that stuff. Social.
Yeah. Website is getwarriortough.com. On the Twitter, I'm at warriortoughphd. On the Facebook, I think I'm Get Warrior Tough on the Facebook. LinkedIn profile, just put Andrew D. Whitman, PhD. The office number is 864-977-1443. info@getwarriortough.com. I mean, there's a million ways to get to me. There's no fence around me, Patrick, and I always answer my calls eventually, man.
Well, Andrew Whitman, truly an honor, sir, having you on the show. I'd love to have you back on. Much success you. Much success to you in the future, sir, and take care.
Thanks, brother.
All right. I hope you loved listening to Andrew. This guy has so much energy, and it is amazing. Remember, you can do anything you want to do. You're the problem, and you're also the solution. Stay tuned for more great guests on the CJ Evolution podcast. And if you rate and review the show on iTunes, I sure would appreciate it. You can find a link on cjevolution.com. Until next time, take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.